it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
3 o'clock, WEEI Afternoons. Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, Ted Johnson, and in case you missed it, a story out of North Carolina. 24/7 Sports, a subsidiary of CBS Sports, picked up by Pro Football Talk. UNC had meetings this morning, reportedly, about a potential exit strategy for Bill Belichick. Given everything that's gone on, we've read a lot of the columns and the accusations. They had one assistant coach that has been suspended for impermissible benefits. He was giving sideline passes. You read about that in one of those stories to one of the players' families. And now, according to this report on 24/7 Sports, North Carolina is not only considering moving on from Bill Belichick, not only considering moving on from him before they play their next game, but is also looking to do so without having to pay the buyout, which still has $20 million at least unpaid on the $30 million he was guaranteed. Ted Johnson, thoughts?
Well, not that surprised. Not that surprised.
Did you see this and say this?
Yeah, I mean, the signs were there. There was enough evidence there that would suggest that this was headed in a bad direction. If you just looked at the last few years here, I think in New England, I'm just surprised that UNC didn't do more homework and talk to more people at the pro level about thoughts on Bill Belichick. Why didn't he get a head coaching job? He preferred to be in the NFL. No teams wanted him. Why is that? UNC did none of that. But Bubba Cunningham, the guy who had his torn sleeves in the press conference that introduced Bill Belichick as the next head coach of UNC, I can't imagine what he must be feeling right now. That whole dog and pony show, wow. There was a lot of evidence here the last few years that would tell you that Bill was not hitting on all cylinders, that the football didn't matter to him like it used to. I mean, I told the story when I was going in the draft, and there was one head coach at the combine that took me to the side and drilled me on cover two, and it was the only head coach that wanted to talk ball with me, and that was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and that was Bill Belichick. And he's so far from being that guy that he was all those years ago, and I understand, but you would think that UNC would have done a better job of vetting this candidate. They went for the quick kind of money grab, similarly to what I think is going on at Colorado, Deion Sanders.
Yep.
You get this initial sugar high, and then it eventually all falls apart. And so I'm not that surprised. I mean, I was ridiculed and mocked for suggesting that they should cut ways with Bill before the season. And so it obviously now, I don't know how, if you're UNC, you don't pursue an avenue to get out. It's embarrassing. It's just really, and you guys were right. That is a high academic standard school, very prideful in that, and you have the highest paid employee of that university making a mockery of the university, and it can't be going over well with the boosters there. I'm sure they are trying everything they can. The only way I think UNC can save face at all on this is if they get out of the next 2 years.
Right.
That's the only way. The way I think, if they have to, if they let him go and they have to pay the full freight, the $30 million, then that's just going to be a hard pill for them to swallow. So I'm sure they're trying to escape those last 2 years.
And just to support your point about maybe the commitment Bill had early in his career versus lately, one of those articles did note that one thing that alienated a lot of people around UNC is your football team's off to a terrible start. And during your bye week, you're on Nantucket with Jordan walking the streets. Like, that's a bad look.
Yeah. Well, he just,
that's not sleeping on your office floor to make sure you get every ounce of no days off. I'm on Nantucket.
Self-awareness has never been Bill's strength. It's self-awareness, or he just doesn't care, which is scary, or something in his brain. He's got that narcissistic brain where it is, he is. He just never is wrong. It's never his fault. He doesn't he's immune to kind of hearing the criticism or letting it affect him. And so that's a dangerous person to be associated with.
All right, I'm sure that's not the last time we'll touch on this today, because it feels like it's a fluid situation and a developing story. If they were having meetings this morning at UNC, my guess is there'll be more reports, more opinions on this. So we will follow it as the day goes along. But
real quick, can I say just before you start? What you're seeing there at UNC with Bill is the drama that was here in New England for all those years, you know, and block out the noise. But I mean, Bill was the primary person, point person in a lot of the drama behind the scenes that gave a lot of content to us in this business. So,
but didn't he say all the time, ignore that noise? So that is that there, therefore there's hypocrisy to that.
There's not a bigger hypocrite really in the world than Bill. So that's just hypocrisy all over the place with him all the time.
So we will see how much longer he is the head coach and whether Stiz pays off his bet that he made with me. But now it is time for the three-point stance.
Winner team!
Ready!
Winner
team!
Winner team,
yeah, there you go!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pasternak! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman, Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or you too are looking for an exit strategy for your head coach, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in Boston sports and beyond. Andy Hart, you will lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance, and I ask you, are you ready?
I sure am.
All right, your 60 seconds start right now.
So hockey season is here. We saw the Stanley Cup champions yesterday at 3:30 or something. That's way to debut early. 5 o'clock, Dan Ball says. I was exaggerating. But the Bruins season, they drop puck tonight in Washington, and there are a lot of storylines with this team. There's a new coach. There's healthy players again. There's expectations high or low, but there's really only one story. I think the Bruins are a lot like the Patriots were to start the year. First year head coach, but the story was a player, and it was about Drake May becoming elite. The story of the Bruins season is about one simple man, and he's between the pipes, and his name is Jeremy Swayman, and he claims he's a new human being. He's paid like a franchise goalie, except he played really poorly last year. And the entirety of this season, to me, hinges on Jeremy Swayman. They're going to have issues scoring. That's just a reality. The defense may or may not be better. It'll definitely be healthier. They may or may not have leadership. They have three associate captains, no captain. Those are all issues. Marco Sturm, what do they do at the trade deadline? That is all details. The story is Jeremy Swayman. Are you worth your contract in year 2 of 8, or are you a bum? I felt strong at the end.
Hmm.
He's kind of a bum, though, last year. Oh, he was a bum last year.
He was one of the worst-rated goalies in the NHL. So, but all reports are that he had a fantastic
was it
preseason.
America's Cup? What was the name of that tournament that he played? The World
yeah,
Cup
that
of
was that was
hockey?
Several months ago.
World Championships.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep, yeah, where he found his humanness again.
Yeah,
right?
We'll see. I'm not necessarily buying, but I think if they're going to have any chance, we know that the roster is not great. Dan Ball is as down on the roster as anybody I've heard, but
it's a rough go.
But it's like football. If you have a quarterback, you got a puncher's chance, and if you don't have a quarterback, it's going to be really hard. If you have a goalie who is worth $64 million, you have a puncher's chance. We see it in the postseason every year. And I just think Jeremy Swayman, for who he is and what he's said and what he said leading up to the contract, what he said this offseason, he better put up or shut up and go away.
Yeah. Sitting here, Jeremy Swayman is in a great spot.
Oh, third person. He went third person.
Nothing I love more. Nothing
Andy
I
Hart doesn't
more.
Like Jeremy Swayman.
But you know what? They're already off to a better start to the season, even though the game hasn't the first game hasn't happened yet, because last year with Jeremy Swayman's contract dispute, that really set a bad tone. And I think that rubbed guys the wrong way. And then Jim Montgomery was a lame duck coach going into the season and lasted all of 20 games. So at least you don't have those you know, any issues like that.
I mean, Bill Belichick is proving just because you're a new coach doesn't mean you're a long-term coach.
No, but I'm just saying there hasn't been any issues in this training camp, you know, big storylines that were taken away from the focus like there were at last year's training
Under
camp.
The radar, actually. Maybe there's health. They got a new coach. People expect – where are expectations for the Bruins? Lowest of all four teams in town by a mile?
Oh, yeah. Not so, even close.
No, so if they do anything resembling, I'm not going to say, you know, make a deep playoff run, but
just
if they win
the
more than they lose and they actually make it to the playoffs, that would make for a successful, pleasant season for fans to watch.
That is the one thing they benefit from is low expectations. I actually think Swayman kind of too, coming off the year he had last year where we were charting. So Dan Ball and I last year were charting, I believe, games in which he allowed five or more goals was the stat we were keeping. That's how bad he was. Just avoid that. Don't have that. Give up three goals, right? And then blame it on you didn't get enough scoring. Lose 3-2.
That's not going to be enough. I don't know where the scoring is going to come from. It's so you can't give up three goals and think that's going to be okay.
Well, you can if you gave up five every game last year.
A 4-3. I mean, the Bruins scoring four goals a night would be possibly a stretch.
Yeah, that's
like,
not happening.
Like Twitch chat talking about you're going to have to win a lot of 3-2, 2-1 games this year. Is the defense going to be that good? And if it is, it's probably led by a resurgent Swayman.
If they can reestablish some credibility and maybe fight for a wild card spot, then that would be reasonable expectations. You know?
Most of the globe is predicting wild card playoff hockey for the Bruins. They did their little season preview, and I think there were like six analysts. I was like five of six predicted they're going to go to the playoffs. Dan Ball?
The number we were charting, so 12 games allowing one or zero goals last year, 11 allowing five or more last year.
Oh,
so the ends of the spectrum were pretty ridiculous.
11 games with five or more goals allowed. Wow.
It's almost hard to do.
Yes, especially when you make $8 million a year and you told everybody you knew your value and you knew where contracts were going and you knew and you did. And
the four interceptions, whatever. We can dismiss all that.
So better goalie play and hopefully a power play that shows up this year.
We can't be greedy. Let's not
get carried away. You're right.
We'll do a little bit more in terms of hockey with the Bruins debuting tonight coming up later on. But in the meantime, we'll leave that one there. Fitzy, are you ready for your three-point stance?
Yes, actually, I just want to share real quick. We got some exclusive audio here. Bill Belichick has responded to the allegations and the calls for his departure from the University of North Carolina.
I'm not leaving.
I'm not leaving!
That was Steve and Brian and Jordan cheering for him in the background.
Oh, I was going to say, I didn't know they had a crowd that big to cheer and make it sound like that at the end.
Oh!
it is in the background.
Sick burn, bro. As far as a three-point stance, this is, on Belichick and Bruins Day, this seems odd, but okay, why not? Let's give it a whirl.
Well, let's see what it is. 60 seconds, go ahead.
All right, listen, nobody wants to hear anything except positive Patriots talk right now because your New England Patriots are the toast of the town. They are the bell of the football these days, coming off of the huge 23-20 win on Sunday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills. Hell, Tom Brady even put them in his top 10 earlier this morning on Fox Sports, and with good reason. Seems like everything is trending in the right direction. And now, of course, people are talking about the Patriots steamrolling through their schedule all the way. Hell, they could be 10-3 by the time they reach their bye week. Well, I am here to play part-time host at WPTB Pump the Brakes Radio and let you know that if there were to possibly be a dreaded trap game, which it seems often are littered about schedules, it could be this Sunday against a New Orleans Saints team that is, yes, middle of the pack defensively, but they're feeling themselves after coming off of a huge win last Sunday at home by two touchdowns against the New York Giants. They played the Buffalo Bills to a 10-point loss just a few weeks ago, have been involved in a couple of one-score wins themselves, and they basically, as a team that is predicted to win one or two games or possibly go 0-17, are going to have that nothing to lose attitude, which sometimes can put a little fear in the hearts of men as well. And what would be better for Kellen Moore, first year head coach, starting off his program, than to give the Patriots a tough game and maybe not just cover, but pull off the upset? I think it's going to be a trap game. Watch out.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a trap game, whatever you want to let down game, whatever you want to call it.
People use trap game most cliched.
I think generally in my mind, trap game is saved for a better football team. So that's why I don't call it a trap game. It's more of a letdown game. It's a maturity litmus test. Are you really mature enough to, as Vrabel wanted to say from day one, take advantage of bad football? The Saints will give you some chances to probably win this football game. Do you take advantage of those, or Do you regress to the team that you have been too often at times this year that turns the ball over, that has penalties, that gives the other team a chance to win the football game? That's how – letdown is what I would say they need to
avoid. I think it's right in classifying it as really a team that's expected to win week in, week out, letting their guard down against a team that's softer and losing the game. I think that defines a trap game. They're not that good to be called a trap game. So I sign off on that, thinking this is you have to validate Sunday's win by winning the Saints. If you don't beat the Saints, it will take a lot of that shine that you've kind of garnered this past weekend and take a lot of that away.
It's one of those where people will say that was your Super Bowl and you fell off afterward. Like we used to do that around here. Like somebody would upset the Patriots and be like, well, that was your Super Bowl. We'll be in the real Super Bowl later in the year. We'll be in the playoffs. Good luck with the rest of your season when you peter out and don't play good football.
And I'll also say this. There's teams that thrive. I mean, if you look at Mike Vrabel's record when he's the underdog, he's got an excellent record. When he's when he was the coach from 2018 to 2023 in Tennessee, he had a lot of good wins when he was big underdogs.
Yep.
He wins at a higher rate being a big underdog than most coaches. Now that you're not sneaking up on anybody now after that week, how can you play now the expectations are put on you? They went from being, maybe the hunter to the hunted in a week. And so can they psychologically make that flip and handle being the hunted now? Because it's, as you know, a lot of our championships, we felt very comfortable being the hunter as opposed to the hunted.
First game you guys had after the Rams 24-17 loss was at home against the Saints, and it was a resounding dub for you guys. Yeah. I just think the Saints could present, look, they're not the most talented football team they'll play by any stretch the rest of the way, but if you go from being an 8.5-point road dog to a 3.5-point road favorite, that's a 12-point swing right there, and everybody is thinking, oh, you'll just roll in because the Saints stink, and the Pats look obviously better than a 3-2 record. They should take care of them easily. There's talent on the other side of the ball, and the Saints are the kind of team that should play with reckless abandon or a nothing to lose approach, which could potentially give the Pats or any team a fit.
Very true.
All right, we'll leave that one there. We'll do a little more on Patriots and Saints, of course, coming up.
And real quick, only one interception for Spencer Rattler.
Oh yeah,
he's got 1,000 passing yards. He's playing pretty well.
He and they are better than I thought. But as Dan said, we'll get to a little bit more of that later.
Because it is time for Ted Johnson's 3-point stance. Are you ready, my friend?
I'm ready, bud.
All right, here are 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, so there's a couple programs I want to talk about. My alma mater, Colorado, and then of course the UNC program down there in Chapel Hill, where Bill Belichick is the head coach. Both of those programs have basically sold their souls to the devil to get and are getting probably what they deserved. I mean, they both did high-profile hires. Deion Sanders, obviously a Hall of Famer, considered the best player to ever play the NFL game, comes into Colorado, turns the program around to some degree. The first 2 years, he has a 500 record, but generates a lot of money for the program. But this year, off to a terrible start. They're 0-3 in conference play. And if you look at what's going on with Bill Belichick, he is 0-3 in conference play, combined 0-6. And these guys are both top 10 in salaries in college football. Deion Sanders makes a little over $10 million a year. He just got a new deal. Rick George, the athletic director, gave him. And Bill Belichick, as we know, got a $10 million deal. And both of them are combined 0-6 in conference play. This is probably going to be a huge lesson to other programs that want a quick fix, that want to kind of just bring in a big name to generate interest. Careful what you wish for, because this is embarrassing. I think not only for UNC, but for my alma mater, Colorado. I'm told that even the former players don't even talk to the athletic director, because Deion has basically isolated all those guys from the program. So this is, you might get that initial sugar high. But in the end, it's not worth it bringing in an outsider who's never coached the game and doesn't know how to navigate the college world.
Instant gratification, Ted, am I right?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's what it is, man.
But at least Colorado got that. I'm not sure. UNC didn't even really get much of that.
No. UNC definitely got got it worse. Because Colorado at least won, I think they won their first four games in Deion Stinger.
And
there.
People were talking, and people were, there was a while there, they were like a
popular bet. I mean, they had the Heisman Trophy winner.
Right, they had the Heisman, they had Michael The Rock, whoever, all these celebrities visiting. I mean, no offense to this guy, because he might be listening, but you brought David Andrews down, and he talked to the team after practice. That's not exactly The Rock. That's not exactly like what was going on in the sexy early phase at Colorado.
You know what's interesting, just doing a little digging on this, is what? How many people work for these teams? I don't know if you guys, there was an article that Christian sent me about our alma mater, Colorado, and just how many staffers, coaches, support people that they hire. Colorado has 57 people on the payroll for the football team. 57. You know how many UNC has? 16. 16
See,
people.
Why he did this? He did this in 2022 and 2023. Well, he stripped down the staff.
Why?
And that was the whole, because he doesn't trust anybody.
No. It's, well, that
and because he thinks he can do everything.
So that Lombardi gets all the money, so that Steve Belichick gets all the money, so that he gets all the money. That's what he doesn't have a big staff was because there, he doesn't want to give money to other people.
Was there any truth to the idea back when he was coaching the Patriots that if you had fewer coaches, the money went back to Bill?
Yes. But the bigger one is he never wanted anybody on the team making more than him.
Right.
That's the you see, you look at Brady wanted two-year $50 million, 25 a year deal. And he wouldn't give it to him because Bill was making roughly a little over $20 million, and he didn't want Tom making more money than he made.
Oh, that's that. Wow. Well, obviously that's only sort of came back around to bite him in the ass.
A little bit. Bill Belichick, things are falling apart in North Carolina faster than they fell apart in New England. We can hold out hope that Hulu footage will sometime reach the airwaves, reach some TV screen that we can watch.
Come on, Pablo Torre. Absolutely. You can do this.
Pablo,
this
I
is
have
your
my
masterpiece.
Faith in you.
This is your Mona Lisa.
You're a great journalist. Give up on Kawhi and all the money out in L.A. Go back to Bill Belichick. That's where you made your bones as a podcaster. But in case you missed it, we'll revisit it. Bill Belichick. They are having exit strategy meetings today at UNC, according to a report from 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports. Will Bill Belichick be around in 2 weeks when his team returns to the field against Cal? Has he damaged his legacy? Right now, if you're a Belichick supporter, tell me why we shouldn't be talking about the negativity, why we shouldn't be questioning his ability. Tell me why we shouldn't be saying he's damaging his legacy. Stiz might try that, but you should too. 617-779-7937. Your calls and thoughts up next on Bill Belichick. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, brought to you by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Out of the Darkness Walk. The Patriots return to the practice field this afternoon. New England continues their three-game road trip in New Orleans against the Saints on Sunday. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. Yesterday, the Pats signed running back Jayshon Corbin to the practice squad. Corbin played for the San Antonio Brahmas of the UFL in 2025, leading the league with 514 yards on 97 carries. He also scored four touchdowns. For ESPN's Mike Reese, free agent running backs Deion Jackson and Damian Martinez were also in for tryouts with the Patriots on Tuesday. From around the NFL, the Cardinals are fining coach Jonathan Gannon $100,000 for a sideline altercation on Sunday with running back Amari DiMercato. And Giants wide receiver Darius Slayton is not expected to play on Thursday night against the Eagles because of a hamstring injury. From around Major League Baseball, the Mariners took a 2-1 series lead with an 8-4 road win in Detroit last night. Game 4 of that series is today. First pitch was at 3:08 this afternoon. Bryce Miller, Casey Mize, the pitching matchup there. The Yankees extended their season with a 9-6 home win over the Blue Jays in Game 3 last night. Game 4 is this evening. First pitch is at 7:08. Louis Varland, Cam Schlittler, your pitching matchup there. In the National League, the Cubs host the Brewers for a Game 3 at Wrigley. First pitch is at 5:08. Quinn Priester, Jameson Taillon, your pitching matchup there. Milwaukee leads that series 2-0. And in the late game, the Dodgers host the Phillies for Game 3. First pitch is at 9:08. Aaron Nola, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the pitching matchup there. L.A. leads 2-0. The Bruins open up the 2025 season in Washington against the Capitals tonight. Jeremy Swayman, Logan Thompson, your starters in net. Boston then host the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow night. And the Celtics open up their preseason schedule tonight in Memphis against the Grizzlies. Tip-off is at 8 p.m. Join the fight against suicide on Saturday, October 25th at the Out of the Darkness Walk on the Boston Common to prevent suicide and raise awareness about mental health. Proceeds benefit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Register today at afsp.org/Boston Walk. That's afsp.org/Boston Walk. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now with WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One of these guys won three Super Bowls.
Ted Johnson here. I mean, he has one of the biggest necks that I've ever seen.
The other two cheered him on in their mom's basement.
Now, sit on Uncle Andy's lap here in Tankathon Nation.
Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.
Parcells was fun. You know, he was a taskmaster, but he was fun. And I think he was compassionate and he cared about his players. I don't think Bill cared about his players enough. And Bill, you know, Parcells did not win anything without Belichick. So clearly he was very instrumental in his two Super Bowls with the Giants. And even the one he got to in New England is when Belichick was on staff for that 1 year.
That was Gary Myers on our show, 2 weeks ago? Talking about Bill Belichick, yep. Bill Parcells. He is the author of Belichick vs. Brady. You can get that on Amazon or wherever you get your books now. I need to read some of the text. The text line is on fire with this Belichick stuff.
Okay.
Responding.
What are they saying?
So 207 says Belichick cost us Super Bowls because of his ego. 207, a different 207, says, I have always defended Bill, but I cannot anymore. He is ruining his legacy, and North Carolina should get rid of him. Ted was right. I was wrong. Sorry, Ted.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
It's all good, bud.
Don't
worry about
it. Side of the street.
All good.
413. I loved Bill Belichick when he was with the Patriots, and I was excited to see him coaching at UNC. But he has shown over the last few months that his ego is in control and not him. And unfortunately, that's going to be his legacy. He should have been above all the pettiness. 802. Bill B is a bum. He's getting his compensation for his true self. What goes around comes around, and then he used a bad word that I can't say.
He's not a bum, for God's sake.
It's amazing how many people just were saying, you know, all the winning was going on, that, you know, there'd be a time where you might come down, you know, and the way you treated people on the way up, that never occurred to him. It just never occurred to him that if things got bad, what it might look like. And so a lot of people were probably thinking, you know, he's getting exactly what he deserves right now.
That there would ever be retribution for the behavior and the patterns established?
Yep.
Or just karma.
Karma. Mm-hmm. But, and also, there's a lot of people that thought his legacy was intact, that it would not be affected by what he did at UNC. And I couldn't have disagreed with those people more before the season started. I'm like, no, this is going to be... this is going to add to it. People are going to judge him with the Patriots based on what he does at UNC, and that's clearly what's happening.
There was so much hype back in the spring. They sold all these tickets. They were on Monday Night Football, but it wasn't Monday Night Football on Labor Day, and then we heard about the documentary series. Like, there was – I mean, this is the fire festival of coaching experiences. That's exactly what this is. It's supposed to be a grand, enormous, spectacular, celebrity-laden affair. And in the end, it's tents with holes in them and bologna sandwiches.
Well, you know what it reminds me of is there for a while there were social media accounts that would order things off of, like, Amazon, Temu, and then put up, like, what the ad online looked like and what actually arrived in my box, what I bought. Mm-hmm. And they were not the same. Like, these products were horrific. I feel like that's what North Carolina got. Like, they had this image of 8 rings, Super Bowls, Bill Belichick, ignore the noise, building a culture and a team and all these things. And then they got this showed up on their campus. Mm-hmm. And I think there were people there because we heard enough early rumblings that saw this coming early on. Like, they hired him December 11th. It seemed like there were people that January, February were already like, are we sure we got the guy we thought we were getting when we gave out $50 million, $30 million guaranteed? Now, I will say, because the Twitch chatters, our friends in there, are getting very upset that we're not giving the counterpoint. There are some in the Twitch chat, and they're scrolling through fast, that still support Bill. That nothing he does now has anything to do with what he did in New England. And I do think history remembers the greatness, the winning often. As long as you don't really commit horrific crimes or do anything in terms of, like, you know, going to jail or Penn State, what went sideways at Penn State. You can lose at the end. You can fall apart. Because a lot of coaches do, right? That was the other thing that some of us were ahead of the curve on was there's probably a reason there's never been a coach this old anywhere. Yeah. Like why, you know, Romeo Crennel in Houston mm-hmm. was the oldest guy ever, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe this game isn't for mid-70-year-olds.
It's not. I mean, look what happened to Mike Gundy. There's a lot of coaches that just, they you know, Mack Brown, I guess. I mean, even though he won at one point, I think, 9 games for UNC.
Yep.
6 last year.
Oh.
The college game is not for
the weak
or the timid. It is a hard, it's way harder than coaching the NFL. Way harder. There's way more things you got to juggle and deal with than you do in the pro game.
And you could argue harder than ever with everything that's going on, changing. Like today, they just announced that, you know, college kids can gamble. Like, Kayshawn Booty got in trouble, was that last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago for what he had done. Like, now they were like, you know what? Gambling's everywhere. We can't control this. Like, the rules of engagement at the college level for money, for NIL, they changed the transfer portal. It was 2, now it's going to be 1. Like, it's always evolving. And there are some coaches I've talked to that are good coaches, really good coaches, that, and I won't say who, but like they have said, no, you couldn't pay me enough to go to college.
No
it's
way.
Just,
no way.
It's a crazy world. You're always on because you're always recruiting. Or like the NFL, yeah, there's free agency, but it's a certain window and it's very structured, right? It's kind of been the same for a while, whereas college is the wild, wild west. Like, and I think that's why Chip Kelly, out. Jeff Hafley, right at BC, out. Yeah, I'll go coach the defense for the
what
Packers.
What about what's going on?
Nick Saban.
What about what's going on? Pete Carroll is not exactly off to the most glorious start with the Raiders as well. He's 74.
Yeah, no, I know.
It doesn't seem like it's kind of like coaching at the collegiate and or professional level, and I'm no ageist by any stretch, does not seem like it's any country for old men at this point anymore. Yeah. And it has evolved, Ted. It used to just be like, remember Steve Spurrier comes from coaching at Florida before he goes to the Washington football team. All right, fine, I can say the Redskins. And he gets there and he's like, wait, you can't just do 9 to 5 like, and then go hit 9 or 18? Like, no. People coach 12, 15, 18 hours. He thought it was country club life, and then he split and went back to South Carolina. And since then, it has gotten exponentially more difficult with the transfer portal, with the NIL. Like, I can only imagine how many different, like, assistants and lieges and other people you need to process all the hassles that go on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, Bill's not the most interpersonal skilled person there is, and these coaches, not only do they have to recruit you, they got to go recruit players. They got to keep them happy while they're at the program, or else they'll go somewhere else.
Right,
and that's the last thing Bill wants to do, was to hold anybody's hands for 4 years to make sure that they're happy, so that they don't fly the coop and go to another program.
And at a time when the person involved is at a weird time in life, right? We all lived through it. Transitioning from 17, 18, 21, high school, college. You're not an adult. You can drink. You can't. Like, there's a lot going on there, and it's just a tough time. 617-779-7937. We'll get back to your phone calls in just a little bit. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, it is noted fantasy football Drake May owner Adam Schefter, ESPN, joining us as he does each and every Wednesday at 3:45. We'll talk to Schefter next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Back here at WEEI, we go right to the guest line for our weekly chat with ESPN's Adam Schefter. That's brought to you by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive, and by Jeanne d'Arc Credit Union, tackling financial wellness since 1912. Stronger members, stronger communities. Learn more at jdcu.org. Mr. Schefter, how are you doing this week?
Andy, Nick, and Ted, what's going on, gentlemen?
So, were you one of the few people that was disappointed in Drake May's performance because he didn't get you a lot of fantasy points?
Who said that?
Well, you told us last week that the Schefter family was a big fan of Drake May and on all your fantasy teams.
Yeah. Well, he played a great game and they won, right? I mean, my fantasy team doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. So, I mean, yeah, I like to see him have double the points, but who am I to complain about that, right?
Right.
I mean, that was his that was a signature win for them and for him. The biggest win they've had in a long time. And I think Drake May would take that game every single time. I'd like more personal stats, but that's me.
You know, Adam, that was the game in which a lot of people kind of just the fervor for Drake May and the Patriots after that win would just was off the charts. Like, are you surprised to hear some of the vernacular being used about to describe Drake May? You know, he's, you know, I mean, he had special traits, but I don't, you know, a lot of people hadn't seen him on a national stage. Yeah. Are you surprised to see kind of how excited people are over Drake May and the Patriots after that big win?
I really think it was just a matter of time before everybody kind of took notice. And I think there were some people that had, but if we go back to the pre-draft process, my trusted, respected colleague Tim Hasselbeck said that Drake May was the best quarterback in that draft class. And the New York Giants and Minnesota Vikings both wanted to try to trade up to New England's spot or higher to try to go get Drake May, and the Patriots wouldn't trade that pick. So I think there were draft analysts out there that knew that Drake May had special talent, and there were other teams out there that felt like Drake May had special talent. And I think that he flashed at times, but when you go and lead a team to a victory like that in Buffalo, it just sort of announces your arrival. And yes, his fantasy numbers were not as robust as I would like them to be, but everybody knows the plays he made and the type of throws he executed to help win that game and put the Patriots square in the playoff conversation. So, yeah, I mean, I think there were people that expected this all along, and now more and more people are seeing it.
That was this week's Drake Take from Adam Schefter, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive.
Adam, I think the way that Mike Vrabel has handled his players and has come across in public to date as coach of the Patriots has surprised some people. I think folks kind of anticipated, because he was kind of a big mouth when he played for the Patriots and a hardo and a tough guy and hard ass, that he may be more like that as a head coach. But instead, he's been a bit more in tune with their feelings. He's been protective of players like Ramondre Stevenson with his fumbling issues. So is that, I just want to ask you, is that more endemic of the way head coaches are going in the NFL? Or could you possibly see more coaches being like Mike Vrabel and less, I don't know, dare I say, Belichickian?
I think coaches are going to be who they are. I don't think you could try to be somebody you're not. And this is, I think, what's made Mike Vrabel successful over time. You know, a couple of things there. You mentioned Ramondre Stevenson and him sticking with him with his fumbling issues, right? We saw an instance on the sideline on Sunday in Arizona where there was a different approach taken, right or wrong. Now, somebody was saying to me that Jonathan Gannon was offering encouragement to Amari DiMarcado. It wasn't like exactly like it looked. Okay, but it had a certain look. It had a certain look to it. And we didn't see Mike Vrabel engage in that type of action when Ramondre Stevenson was fumbling. And the other thing, you know, I got to be honest with you. There's one video and one moment that I remember for all the success that Mike Vrabel had in Tennessee. There was a video that I guess the Titans must have shown or somebody else put it up on social media, but I always remember seeing him standing outside the locker room after they had won a big game. Don't remember who they beat, but he was there to personally greet each player. Now, maybe that goes on regularly with other coaches, but I hadn't seen that kind of thing in the NFL. The head coach standing outside the locker room waiting for every player to come in so he could shake their hand and congratulate them one by one until every player was in. I remember that video. And I think that demonstrates and indicates who Mike Vrabel is as a coach. So, yes, is he a hardo? Is he a tough guy? Is he a man's man? Yeah, he's all those things. But he also puts his players first, which is why I believe he's got the support of a lot of the people in his locker room.
ESPN's Adam Schefter here with WEEI Afternoons. Adam, you mentioned the fumbling issues with Stevenson. We've seen them kind of work through that, but they also lost Antonio Gibson to the ACL. Any chance there's a trade market out there for a team like the Patriots? Although I know Cardinals, Chargers, there's some other teams that could be in the market. Any running backs available via the trade market?
you know, I guess when it comes to running backs, my thought always is, not that I'm trying to devalue them, there are some incredible running backs, but you could go sign a running back off a practice squad that might be able to make a mark. Why are you going to give up compensation for one that might cost you more in draft pick compensation and salary? And I don't know who the guys are who would be available. You never know, like the 49ers got Christian McCaffrey at the deadline. Is there a losing team out there that would consider dealing one of its lead running? Maybe. I mean, I guess that could happen. But I don't know a name right now that I could say to you, oh, this is who New England should be targeting. And the fact of the matter is, you know, Ramondre Stevenson was a high pick who they paid, who's produced in the past. And Travion Henderson was a high pick who flashed in the summer, and we're still waiting for him to make a huge mark in the season. So they have some talent back there. It's not like they're bereft of talent. It's just time for that talent to make its mark.
Hey, Adam, I'm wondering if you're surprised at all by how bad and how hot that seat is getting for Bill Belichick down there at Chapel Hill. I'm sure you've been following that. Any thoughts on that storyline?
I don't pay that much attention to it because I'm kind of living in my own insulated world. But I'm when Bill goes down there and doesn't have the type of success that we're accustomed to seeing him have on a regular, that does surprise me. It sounds like there's a lot going on. I think it's an adjustment for any college coach going to the pros or pro coach going to college. I think there's an adjustment, a lot of things to learn. But, yeah, I'm surprised that it hasn't worked out better so far.
Adam, are you surprised at all by just the not only the intensity on field that Stephon Diggs has brought to the Patriots, but also the what he's done on the sidelines, the locker room, pregame, et cetera? I thought Sunday, between the pregame chat with Melissa Stark, his pep rally before the game, and then what he said in the locker room and how ferocious he was, you can see that he has locked this team in, and he is the leader, and they'll follow him into battle or anywhere.
Well, first of all, he happens to be, I mean, if you've ever met him before, he's a very likable guy. And I think that as you get older and you mature some, you recognize how important certain things are to you. And he's had it taken away from him in certain spots. And New England, you know, was willing to pay him. And he came in there and he's responded to the way he's been coached and the way they've treated him. And they're getting the best of Stephon Diggs right now. And, you know, first Patriot receiver to have two back-to-back 100-yard receiving games since Julian Edelman in 2019. And if they're going to get that type of performance on and off the field, then that's going to really elevate the Patriots.
Mac, before we let you go, I wanted to sneak in a Mac Jones question. Obviously, didn't work here, and now it's working in San Francisco, but they just paid Brock Purdy. Any idea maybe how that plays out? Do you think Mac Jones is a starter in the NFL somewhere?
Well, Brock Purdy's not going to practice again today, which tells me that Mac Jones is in line to start again this week. And Mac Jones has played well. The environment has elevated his play, as the 49ers thought it would. He signed a two-year contract. And I guess that you look at it as a two-year rehab project, so to speak, where you kind of rehab your confidence and playing style and swagger and all those things. And he's handled everything unbelievably so far. So his value is going up. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to look to trade him. I think they're very happy with him. And they paid Brock Purdy. I think it's Brock Purdy's job, no matter what happens. I think it's Brock Purdy's job right now.
All right, Adam.
But there's value in Mac Jones. Yep.
Yep. We'll talk to you next week, and good luck with the fantasy football team this weekend.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
You too.
Adam. That was Adam Schefter, ESPN, here with WEEI Afternoons.
Those are dramatic pauses. You know, it's hard to.
He's got a little bit of that. Curran has that sometimes. Yeah. Like, you get that pause. It's a long pause, pregnant pause. Are you done? Are you not done?
Yep.
And, you know, it catches me every once in a while.
Catches me, too.
Adam Schefter with some very good things to say about Drake May. We'll get into those a little bit later. But up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we're going to touch on the Boston Red Sox. They had their breakup press conferences this week, and Dan Ball's got a little game. It's called Will He Stay or Will He Go Now, and we're going to find out what the future Red Sox look like moving into the 2026 season. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.